Batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move off.
And we're live! Look who's back!
Hello and welcome back to a bonus episode of the First Time Watchers Podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are
Walter Vinci,
Romano De Silva.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. Now remember, you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of the episode for other ways to contact us and find out what we may be discussing in the future. In this episode, we will be revisiting The Dark Knight Rises. Now keep in mind that there will be major spoilers in this episode, so if you have not seen The Dark Knight Rises, go watch it, listen to our review of the movie, and then come back and listen to this episode.
Because someone's taken someone to school.
So I just want to establish that the reason for this episode is because SlashFilm.com put up a very interesting article detailing 15 things that bothered them about The Dark Knight Rises. And we thought it would be a great opportunity to read those concerns and react to them. Now, before we do so, let's just take a minute to give our listeners a recap of how we felt about The Dark Knight Rises. Romano.
I loved it. I definitely... It's not my favorite. It's probably my second favorite. I still feel like The Dark Knight is the better movie, but overall, I had a lot of fun with it. I do concede that there are some issues with it. I think they're minor. They don't detract that much from the movie. I think anyone that's a Batman fan could still find a lot to love about this movie. And, you know, haters gonna hate.
God. Wally?
Yeah, I love this movie as well. It's Batman. It's Bane. It's the third part of the Bat trilogy from Christopher Nolan. And, yeah, I'm with Hermano. The sticking points that I do have are relatively minor. And I believe after I saw this article you sent me, I actually spent about 15 minutes or so writing out
you said
15
email,
answers.
And I was wondering how long you took. But anyways, my reactions to the movie were not nearly as positive as the two of you.
Boom.
I do still think it's a relatively solid movie. I think that the issues that we're going to discuss actually do detract from the movie, and that it is the weakest of the trilogy. I think that they actually get weaker as they go along, obviously the first one being the best. I think that there are character issues that do detract from this movie that are actually established in the second movie. But anyways, on to the article from SlashFilm.com that was a collaboration between Peter Chiaretta, Jermaine Lussier, and David Chin. And it is titled 15 Things That Bothered Us About The Dark Knight Rises, and it was posted on Monday, July 23rd. So their first issue is, when and how did Bane find out that Batman's identity and applied sciences? I'll try to go briefly over how on Slash Film they react to it. When Bane and Batman first meet, Bane knows his true identity. He likely learned this from Talia al Ghul, his boss, who likely learned it from Ra's al Ghul, her father. But the timeline doesn't quite fit. Talia al Ghul and Bane were trained when Talia was young and escaped the pit. She and Bruce seem to go around the same age, so about 15 years before Bruce met Ra's al Ghul in his late 20s. So did Ra's call his daughter at some point in this small time window, tell her Bruce is Batman, then give her the idea to become Wayne Enterprise board member? As a long con backup plan if the sequence in Batman Begins failed, it seemed like there should be a more concrete explanation, as this information is rather crucial to the plot of the third movie.
Ahem! All right. First off, they never exactly established that Talia al Ghul went to her father and was immediately starting training in the League of Shadows. That's never said. You just see her escaping from the pit. So the timeline can be whatever it needs to be in order for this to fit.
Well, how does she know about her father's plans then?
Because she obviously went to her father, and that's how he leads the raid that gets Bane out of the pit in the first place.
It seemed like a lot of coincidences have to happen in order for this whole plan to formulate.
But they don't need to go into that timeline. But Bane was, in fact, a member of the League of Shadows.
Yeah.
And Bruce also trained with the League of Shadows and with Ra's al Ghul. And so Ra's al Ghul and Talia both know who Batman is. Bane's also just as clever as Batman.
Which they don't really establish
in
the movie.
And is able to... He has a crazy master plan. Mind fuck everybody in Gotham.
We ultimately find out that it was not his plan.
You don't know that either. You just know that Talia al Ghul is the person in charge of Bane. You don't know that Bane didn't come up with this plan on his own, because he's actually an incredibly smart.
I think they set up the fact that he maybe had feelings for her. Just by him shedding a tear, because he obviously has feelings for her. It could have been his plan all along, but he's still sort of like a slave to her.
Which undercuts the ferocity of Bane.
It does. That's one of my complaints in the movie, that it turns him into a bitch at the very end.
Yeah.
But it's such a minor thing. Like,
minor? It's a key character in the movie.
It's a small moment. It happens at the end. It doesn't take away from the entire movie, because he's still a badass in the whole beginning of the movie. Just because he shows a little bit of a human side at the end doesn't mean that he's not any less of a badass, because as soon as she's out of the room, what happens? He goes to shoot Batman right in the face. He's like,
you'll have to imagine the fire.
He turns badass instantly right again.
No, then he's just a lackey for her. He's just another thug. That's all he is.
He didn't listen to her. She's like, keep him alive. He pretty much just said, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
He's like, F that, I'm killing him.
You know what I mean? He's not a lackey. He's got his own thoughts.
Okay.
Boom!
No, sorry.
And therefore, Bane could easily deduce, you know, that Wayne's getting his hardware from somewhere, and what better way than to bring it to Applied Sciences, which is not
entirely
hidden.
But once again, Bane is not the one who figured all this out.
No, Ra's al Ghul did.
No, and Talia al Ghul, right, so Bane is not the one that had all this information. So it further undercuts his intellect to Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Oh, I still think he's very clever. I mean, he's got this plan, you know, the basically.
But it's not his plan.
You don't know that.
Yes, you do.
They never come out and said. Talia never comes out at one point ever in the movie and say, by the way, I came up with this whole idea, and Bane just went along with it.
But
you don't know
she
that.
She turns out to be the bad guy in the end, so therefore it's
she
her
turns out,
plan.
She turns out to be the person that Bane's following around. Bane's like essentially her protector and
lackey
and the
bodyguard.
Yeah, bodyguard and whatnot.
Not mastermind, but not smart.
She says, "I'm here to finish my father's work." Bane trained with the leadership with the League of Shadows. Talia does not.
Sure, he trained with the League of Shadows, so he became a super soldier, essentially.
Yeah, but they also didn't train him to be stupid in the League of Shadows either.
Well, no, it depends. I think it also depends on the ranks of which you are in the League of Shadows. If you're high up in the ranks, then you have to obviously have the smarts combined with the strength and the intellect. If you're lower on the ranks, you're probably just going to be a thug, you know?
Yeah, but someone who is physically imposing and as powerful as Bane would never just be a regular thug.
So he's a super thug.
No, he's not a super thug.
All he is a super thug.
He's not really. I mean, you can even deduce from the beginning, opening scene of this movie, when he's like, he figures out while he's masked that the guy didn't actually shoot. Why would you shoot a guy before you throw him out of a plane?
Exactly.
He's
smart.
Got smarts. He's not stupid. He's just not just some guy that's just drooling underneath that mask. Like,
he's not like the other Bane from...
He's got intelligence.
No, he probably has a script. That's all he has. If he's a thug and a lackey for Talia al Ghul, then he has a script to go by.
I think you're giving him less credit than he deserves. I think he's smarter than you think.
No, it's not established in the movie, so I don't think he's very smart.
And that's one of Batman's big faults, is he misunderestimates his intelligence. And Batman tries going head-to-head with him, and
happens. He underestimates his strength.
He also underestimates intelligence, too. Batman tries to outsmart him at one point in the fight scene where he throws the bus,
that was just a last resort.
He's like, oh, theatrics.
That was just a last resort in the fight.
Yeah, but Bane's not buying it for a second.
Yes, because it was a last resort. He didn't do anything.
He even turns the lights on. Bane's like, yeah, it's not going to work either. Darkness. You seek to hide in the darkness.
It's not intellect that makes Bane superior in that movie. It's strength.
And Batman's trying to out-strategize him by doing all these other things. It's none of it works.
The only thing that he really does is turn off the lights.
Bane is ready for him every step of the way. Yeah. Bane has his moves calculated.
But it's strength. To me, it's strength and not intellect.
Bane only makes one error in Judgment later.
All right. Next, next concern is Blake intuits that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and they explain, "What the fuck, dude? First of all, I'm highly skeptical that anyone could see just by looking at Bruce Wayne's face that he was Batman. But even if this were not at all implausible, the fact that this development occurs in the first act of the film is a strong indicator of this film's issues. Namely, the need to cram in as much plot development as possible. In any other film, such a reveal would normally come after the end of some sort of prolonged interaction between these two characters. Here, they get it out of the way right from the beginning in a fashion that's kind of abrupt, and it has no emotional resonance whatsoever."
Ahem. All right. First thing that Blake says to Commissioner Gordon: "Haven't you ever wondered who he actually is?" That's an implication that Blake has been thinking about this. He wants to know who Batman is.
Don't you think every more than him have been doing this? Have wondered this?
Not just above that pay grade. He's constantly acting above his pay grade in this movie.
Oh my God. Don't you think there's other cops, that there's other citizens that are wondering who the hell is Batman?
No, because I think in a lot of the other movies, a lot of the people don't consider Batman, especially in the beginning movie, they just think of him as a freak, as like a joke.
Okay, like, then the cops then.
They don't take him seriously. So why would they even put a thought into who he is?
Even Matthew
the cops take him seriously.
They just pretty much call him like this masked like maniac or like a joke. You know what I mean?
He's a vigilante.
They don't treat him with seriousness or respect.
No, the cops take him seriously.
Eventually, but I mean, at that point, like I don't think that it's like something that would be on their mind. As long as he's doing what he does, like what does it matter who he is? I don't think that it's on everyone's mind. Who is it? I mean, there are some people, obviously, it's, you know, that are going to question. Who is this guy? Like, why? What motivates him? Why does he do what he does? And Blake is one of those guys.
And then you have to ask the other question too. Like, wow, Batman's got a tank. He's got a bat pod. He's got this crazy shit that flies around. You know, how the hell could Batman afford this unless he was some sort of millionaire? Hey, wait a second.
That's one of my slight nitpicks that I don't think detracts that much from the movie.
Slight. My God.
It's a slight nitpick because I feel like more people should have been able to figure this out. Like, Commissioner Gordon not being able to figure this out is ridiculous.
So how is that a slight nitpick? How does that not become something a bit major, a major plot hole in this universe?
I don't think it's a major plot hole. I just think it's just one of these things where, like, how can people not be questioning this at every step of the way?
If you make this, as the Nolans have done in this trilogy, is make it so grounded in reality, how do you not have more smart people intuiting that putting these pieces together? You know, if Blake was able to put this together, wouldn't other Gothamites have started to put two and two together?
Even Blake, well, no, all the Gothamites don't have the imagination of a young kid when he first meets him. Because he even says, like, around the home, we talked a lot about you, like, what if you were Batman? What if you were Batman? Uh-huh. And now he's a full-fledged investigator. His detective work uncovers, like, Daggett's involvement and all this other stuff. He even gets him a field promotion from Commissioner Gordon. His detective work is spot on. So how do you know he's not investigating Batman? Like, he's trying to put all these pieces together, and finally he's like, you know what, I'm just going to confront him. I'll pull a Columbo and just, take a shot in the dark and see what his reaction is. I know you're Batman. And Bruce stops dead in his tracks. That's his confirmation. He had a hunch, and it paid off in spades, and then he could tell him his story.
You know, speaking of this, why didn't Bane tell the public who Batman really was?
Because he wants him to suffer.
Well, how would that detract him from suffering? How would that take away from suffering?
At that point, what would it have gained him?
Some sort of advantage, I'm sure, something.
I mean, what end, though? Like, what was he expecting to happen if he were to reveal...
To further take out the heart of the people of Gotham?
He's already done that. He's taken over the city.
To even do it some more, if they're looking for a beacon of hope, as Batman is supposed to be in this universe, then wouldn't that even dig a little bit more?
And where is the hope when he essentially levels, like, a three-quarters of the city, cuts everybody off from the outside world, and... There's no... Batman's not there to help him. Where did Batman go? Where's your god now? He doesn't need to reveal. He just knows how to take him out.
Yeah.
Take him out of the equation. He's able to run roughshod over Gotham until Batman gets back.
Next. Bruce Wayne is down, then back up, then down, then back up. Wayne begins this movie with a significant limp, which is remedied with a pretty cool-looking electronic brace. we spend a lot of time watching him ramp up, and we're thrilled to watch him finally kick ass again, only to see him totally incapacitated by Bane about two-thirds of the way through the film. At first, this might be a brilliant, ballsy, unprecedented move. Would Nolan really take the hero out of the final climactic battle sequence? Nope. Turns out it foretells that we just have a bunch more movie to go. We get to watch him recuperate again before finally facing Bane at the end of the film. Sans limp, by the way, even without the brace. So, wait, what the hell was the point of having Bruce go through the arc twice in one film? They say that it may have worked for a miniseries or a TV show, but in the course of one film, it seems really drawn out and unnecessary. I agree with this. I think if you just have the Bane fight sequence, and that is what incapacitates him, I don't really see the point of them establishing that he's this kind of crippled individual at the beginning of the film. You know, granted, he's been out of the game for 8 years, you know, and the work that he did before he went out of the game probably injured him a bit, but you can't have 8 years to recover and just keep active.
But he is active. I mean, when you see him, he's not flubby. He's not out of shape.
He's limping around with a cane.
He's stiff and sore, yeah.
Yeah?
So, yeah, he's got like a kind of a stiff knee, but the brace fixes that for him.
I think it's just a peek into the toll of what being Batman has done to his body. I mean, what's wrong with showing that? Like, is it like weird to derive that he might have a limp? You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand
the issue is having him go through his arc that twice in the same movie. You know,
I think the first time was to show that, you know what, it's been 8 years. He's not been training to the level that he would have been if he just kept doing it, kept being Batman. And then he just quickly tries to think that he could just jump right back into being Batman. And obviously you see the outcome of that. He couldn't match up with Bane.
Bane even calls him out. He's like, you're trying to fight me like a younger man. It's been 8 years. So Bruce Wayne is now 8 years older, and he's trying to fight Bane like he's, you know, a younger person. And that's not going to work. And Batman just doesn't get it through his thick skull, you know, in enough time to come up with a different tactic.
I mean, go ahead.
No, I just think it adds too much to the film. It forces the viewer to see Wayne go through this arc twice, and I don't think it's necessary. I think if you see him go through the struggle once, it's fine. That's all that's needed. All
right. Think of it in the terms of Michael Jordan. When he first retired, and he went to go play baseball or whatever, and then he tried to make a comeback, was he the same Michael Jordan?
No.
Why?
Because he had to get his game legs under him again.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens to Bruce Wayne.
Okay, but we don't need that story. We don't need that story in this movie.
That first fight with Bane is my favorite part of the entire movie.
Yes, I agree.
So you saying that you don't need that? Like
No. I don't say you don't need that. I don't think you need to show that he's a crippled old man in the beginning of the movie.
I think you do. I mean,
No. You show him fighting through that, using the knee brace to help him become a more functional Batman, and then him going through this arc again, recovering after the Bane sequence. There's two arcs there. I think the arc of going through the fight with Bane and the subsequent recovery after that is fine. I think the arc of him recovering from his years away from the game is unnecessary.
It's not even like an arc, though, if you really think about it. He just puts a brace on, puts the suit back on, and goes right back out there.
It's
there's no, like, montage of him training or...
There's a montage of him putting the brace on and establishing
it's
that
not
he's...
Quite
it's
a
not
montage.
A montage. It's not a montage, one scene.
But it's a couple of scenes establishing that he's trying to find ways to be able to help him get back into the game.
It's that one scene. He puts the brace on, he's like, does that hurt? He's like, oh, you want to try this out? And then he kicks it, he's like, oh, it feels good. Yeah. And then that's it.
I don't think it's necessary.
There's no arc. This is something like I'm getting back into this.
I don't think it's necessary to show him as a crippled old man. That's all. Don't you think that having a broken back takes more than just a few weeks, some ropes, and a firm smack of the vertebrae to fix?
Well,
it's not broken, first of all. It was a dislocated vertebra. And they just popped it back in. People do that with shoulders all the time. And...
Shoulders? My God! It's a vertebrae! It's a little bit more complicated than a shoulder.
It could have been... I don't know. I'm not a freaking... chiropractor, bro. I mean, I'm sure that you know, stuff like that has happened, and people can still walk. They're not crippled.
He couldn't walk. He had to have. I mean, come on. You're asking me to believe this universe that no one's created, and all it takes is a firm smack in the back to repair his dislocated vertebrae.
Allow me to elaborate. I fell off a ladder back in 2000,
yeah,
and I thought I had broken my back. I actually couldn't move my legs for about 20 minutes after I hit the floor.
Okay.
I still have incredible back pain now, but I'm able to walk, and if it gets cold out, I limp big time. And I'm not a crime fighter, but in his
did you dislocate your vertebrae?
I don't know what I did to it.
Okay, so you don't know what really actually happened to
you.
Yeah,
then probably one of the
they establish in this movie that he has a dislocated vertebrae.
Yeah.
All it takes is a firm smack in the back. Not believable. Unbelievable.
All it took for me to be able to get my back built up was just working out with
weight. Completely different situation. In this universe, they establish that he dislocated his vertebrae. They slap it into place. To me, unbelievable.
It's put back in place by an actual doctor.
Oh, Hermano. Anyways.
It's fixed. They pop it back into place, and then he's able to actually start rebuilding his body. Just like someone like me did when I hurt my back.
Now, here is an issue that is presented on Slash Film that I do disagree with. Alfred says goodbye to Bruce. And on the article it's written, I presume this is supposed to be a monumental moment, a moment that has constant presence in Bruce Wayne's life, turns his back on him. Only it happens with such clunky, stilted dialogue in such a poorly staged way that I literally cringed at how bad it was. Now, I disagree. I thought that was a very well done scene. I think it was very emotional. As I said in our review of The Dark Knight Rises, that Alfred is the emotional center of this whole trilogy, and that every scene with him is very well done and very well acted. And
it's
I believe every line.
It's Michael Caine.
Of course.
I mean, it's like a guy that pretty much took you on after your parents died. He's, for all intents and purposes, he's pretty much like a second father to Bruce. Like, of course that scene's powerful when that guy who's been trying to steer you through all three of these movies and is trying to save your life any which way he can, and he has to drop this bomb on you. And then it's of course it's emotional. Like, I don't get what they didn't get out of that scene.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Wally, was there anything?
Have Alfred is hoping to shock Bruce out of becoming Batman again for Bruce's own well-being.
Fair enough. Why wouldn't the SEC just overturn Bane's fraudulent trades? On the article, they say, I mean, it's pretty clear that they were done under fraudulent... I'm sorry. It's pretty clear that the trades were done fraudulently, right? Else, why the hell did they think that Bane was doing there?
All right, they say this specifically in the movie. It was done the night during that evening after the break-in. So the break-in, the police come, they break up, Bane and all of his men scatter to the winds. Fox comes over the very next day and says, "Last night you made a bunch of put options that all went bust."
Then
he says, "We might be able to prove fraud because they have your fingerprints."
Right.
So you wouldn't be able to prove fraud immediately because the first thing SEC would go, well, these are all fingerprinted by you, Bruce. Like, so did somebody else suddenly steal your fingerprints? As incredulous as that may sound,
don't they have videotape of the people of them breaking into this? They have to have video of this.
They do, but the trades weren't done then. Everything was just uploaded at that point, and it took place later on that evening.
Wouldn't they have been able to establish, hey, you know, this actually might have been able to be done by these people, these thugs who broke in?
All right, to put it this way, if you think you have something contained, and something else happens outside of that containment, then you wouldn't know to even look.
Hermano?
I really hate shit like this. Like, to me, like, that nitpick is the equivalent of someone saying, like, how come we never see Batman go to the bathroom? How come we never see him sit down to eat? Like, it's such a... Like, who cares? Like, seriously, who the F cares?
You're right. I believe that is one
such,
of the more
like,
nitpicky
that's
things.
That's like, holy crap, man. Are you serious? Like... That detracted from the movie for you? Like, come on, man.
I really, personally, didn't give it much of a second thought. Christian Bale and Marion Cotillard have sex. On the other hand, yes, these are two very attractive individuals. Why shouldn't they give in to their carnal desires? On the other more reasonable hand, there is virtually no development in this relationship between these two. They're running in the rain, then they start making out, then in the next scene they're naked. And if only real-life romance worked this way. Seriously, though, with no emotional attachment to this relationship, Talia's eventual betrayal is nothing more than a Shyamalan-style twist with no impact behind it. A missed opportunity. I agree.
I disagree.
Why do you disagree?
All right, look at the facial structure of Marianne Cotillard and...
here comes the theory, please.
And what's her bucket? Not Katie Holmes, the other one.
Maggie Gyllenhaal.
They both have the same kind of angly chin, the same high cheekbones, the same curly hair, the same high forehead, same set of the eyes. Her facial features are very similar to Rachel's. She even picks up a picture looking at Rachel.
So,
and says, who is this?
So do you think Ra's al Ghul genetically engineered his daughter to look
Maggie
Gyllenhaal?
That's just coincidence that he looked like. That'd be a really insane plan from Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
But the fact that she looks so strikingly to Rachel holding a picture of it, and Bruce is still obviously hung up on Rachel, he says at the beginning of the movie, where he said that's why he, after Rachel died, he lost it all. So there's a woman that looks just like him, that's, you know, close to him, and those old feelings come back, and that's why they have sex.
I don't see how that's established.
Outside of that, they have a completely professional relationship.
Yes, exactly. They have no romantic relationship at all.
And that's why it makes sense in that moment that he's thinking of Rachel. He's looking at her picture. He sees someone who looks very similar to her.
I don't see how his type, so to speak. I don't see how she looks like Rachel at all. You know, I don't see that connection. I don't see how that connection is made.
Yeah, facial structures are very similar.
I don't see it. Romano?
I think it was... To me, that scene was one of the ones I didn't like very much. I thought it didn't add anything. Like, it didn't make it extra shocking when you finally reveal, you know, she reveals who she is at the end, who she really is. So it was one of those scenes where I think it might have been like maybe a momentary weakness in Bruce, where maybe he was like, I mean, at that point he had just lost Alfred. I think the heist at the thing had just happened as well, so he's pretty much like Alfredless and potentially losing his house. I think he was losing his house at that point, right? So he's kind of...
No, he got to keep his house.
Oh, he got to keep his house.
Wayne Manor remains untouched.
But basically, I think it was just like a moment of weakness. Maybe he was thinking about Rachel. What if Alfred had just dropped that bomb on him about how she had really chosen Harvey. And maybe that was all there was to that scene. I mean, that's all I really derived from it.
So Batman is a street artist now? After months away, being mentally tortured and physically broken, Bruce Wayne returns to Gotham. He spends the first few hours of what could be the final day in Gotham history getting purposely caught by Bane's cronies, a huge risk, and then escapes and saves Commissioner Gordon and John Blake with mere seconds to spare. Yet somehow, with this impossibly frightening ticking clock, he finds a time to use gasoline to make a huge bat symbol on the top of the bridge, with the knowledge Gordon will be there, pick up the flare, and light it up. Theatricality is part of Batman's persona, yes, but it seems like there might be a better use of his time.
Ahem. What is Batman?
What is Batman?
Over the course of the one thing they keep saying, what is Batman?
Symbol.
He's a beacon of hope.
Okay. You're
He lights. He creates a beacon for everyone in Gotham to see.
Yes.
It even shocks Bane. Bane's first words, his eyes go really wide. That's impossible.
You're missing the last sentence of this. It seems like there might have been a better use of his time.
No, he needs to get the people, like, he has to give them hope. Batman needs to show that he is back, that, like, this is my city. And the big burning bat on the bridge, alliteration.
I mean, so, in this time period that he finally arrives back at Gotham, he has time to make the symbol, and he knows that Commissioner Gordon is going to be right at that exact spot. And see that flare.
He doesn't know that.
Coincidence?
He gets a lucky break that it's going to happen.
A lucky break.
Anyone, he knows anyone on that ice. Once he takes out those bad guys, it could be anyone there. Just light it up.
And it just happens to be Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Sorry. No.
It could be anyone on that bridge.
You think anybody is going to put two and two together?
If Batman appears in front of you and says, light that road flare, you will light that road flare.
Why doesn't he light himself?
Because he wants someone else to see him.
Oh my God. No.
Because that's how the legend starts again. Because someone's like, I saw him with my own two eyes. Batman came while I was walking on the ice, and that's what that. It's not just some crazy street artist that did that. Batman is back.
Then it's poor writing if it just happens to be coincidentally Commissioner Gordon.
It just happened to be quick. It could have been anybody, but anybody who would have seen Batman are like, oh shit, he's back.
Then that would have been a great opportunity for someone of the public, any normal guy, to do that and have that hope come back into their eyes and see Batman themselves. And this is one of my problems with these movies is that you don't see the public enough and their reaction. You only see the rich people and the cops. That's all you see in this movie, in these movies. And it's not, you don't see anything through the public's eyes and the hope that that they're desiring of the symbol of Batman. So it would have been better written if it was an individual who's cast off by the Scarecrow character.
Agreed. But the fact that it's Commissioner Gordon, it makes sense too.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Romano?
I think, weren't there a few scenes where, like, there were some, like, chalk drawings of, like, the bat symbol across the city?
Yeah.
I think the people, there were some people out there that were still holding on to hope for Batman to return. And are you guys referring to the scene where Commissioner Gordon's walking across the ice?
Yeah.
What's so difficult to believe that he would know that he was there? They were holding court for Commissioner Gordon. You don't think they would have announced that? Like, Bane would have announced that as, like, this big deal? Like, hey,
but the time, it's really more the time frame that he does all this in, with such little time to spare. And one of my main complaints about this movie was that they bring it down to the seconds that the bomb has to explode. You know? It's just too unbelievable for me.
So, you know, I completely buy it. Batman has to show this is my city. That's always been Batman's MO. This belongs to me.
So here's another one that's more of a nitpick that I don't necessarily agree with. Bruce Wayne forgets to do proper background checks. You would think that after Ra's al Ghul and members of the League of Shadows crashed Wayne's party and burnt down the Wayne Mansion, that a stricter security policy would have been better implemented for Wayne Manor events. First he hires a maid who's actually a notorious cat burglar, then he hires a woman to head his board who's actually the daughter of one of the most villainous individuals out there. Shouldn't he have done a little more digging before surrounding himself with these individuals? Speaking of which, and if Anne Hathaway's Selina is easily able to adopt fake identities and hack super encrypted passwords, like the one on Wayne's expensive safe, why does she need the clean slate program so badly?
Ahem. You have a crazy busy party. She's not hired. She just shows up.
Yes.
She sneaks in.
Yes.
She's a cat burglar.
I agree with
she's
you.
She's in the disguise and
yes.
No one's going to pay attention
That's
to
fine.
Random maid. I'll do it.
That's
you know. So she cracks the safe. She steals the pearls. Mm-hmm. Gets the fingerprints. Mm-hmm. Jumps out the window.
Yes.
Now the reason why she needs a clean slate is that, yeah, she can do it locally, but she couldn't get herself from an Interpol database. She doesn't have that kind of skill. Or any other police databases that she might be in. She'd have to go from city to city to be able to do this, or even...
Don't you think if she has the ability to crack a Wayne Enterprises security system, that she would have the...
It's not a Wayne Enterprises security system, it's a safe that he bought.
It's just like a home safe.
Yeah. They said it was uncrackable. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was
uncrackable. It's not like she's breaking into the CIA, like she's...
Yeah, she's a cat burglar, she's not a master hacker.
Come on,
she needs the clean
stuff
to get
records. That's one of their weaker nitpicks, which I don't necessarily buy into that much, and that's fine.
What number are we on?
Nine.
I'm not sure. You're nine?
Yep.
Okay. Why? What's up?
This is going to be like a 5-hour.
No, this won't be a 5-hour. Why does Bane take a break from his master plan to ship Bruce Wayne off to the desert? I don't believe the prison's location is ever named, but it sure seems like it's way the hell far away from Gotham. The sequence was supposed to be Jodhpur, Rajasthan, India? Would Bane really just hop a flight with Wayne at this crucial juncture in his grand master plan just to make sure Bruce has a front row seat to the world's destruction?
Yes.
Yes.
He would?
Yes. Because Batman could rally the troops easily. Bane knows this. And the only way to be able to take full iron grip on Gotham is to take that out of the equation. So why not drop him into a pit? What Bane's not expecting is the other prisoners to help him. He's expecting.
You think
Bruce
he would have a better grip of the prisoners that he's put down there? If he's so effing smart.
He hasn't put those prisoners down there. Somebody else has put those prisoners down there. So these prisoners have been there for a while. He's not expecting them to help him. He's expecting him to just wallow around and die. Is what he wants.
Then even so, you would think that he would keep him isolated physically from the other two that are helping him. You know, the doctor.
But he doesn't know that they're going to help him.
But still, you would think that. Just personal interactions. I don't know Bruce Wayne's charisma and way of words that he might be able to get somebody on his side,
which he does.
Yes, exactly. And if Bane is so smart and so intelligent, You don't think he would be able to establish this? To say, wait a
no,
minute,
he didn't see
this to foresee this?
He didn't think that Batman was going to get out of the pit. He thought Batman was going to be crushed by watching Gotham burn.
Yeah. Well, also, does he have to be there? Does he have to travel halfway around the world to be there? In this moment that Gotham in his hands.
Well, if you had an enemy that you wanted to crush, you damn well might have made sure that he saw your face and be like, "Yep, I did this to him."
Well, can't you put it on a television screen?
You could, but it doesn't have that personal touch to it.
Romano?
I got nothing.
Okay, how does Bruce Wayne get back to Gotham? How does Bruce Wayne travel back to Gotham in a matter of days with absolutely no resources whatsoever? Not only is he bankrupt, but Alfred has disappeared. He has no identification of any kind, which includes the necessary passports to get back to the United States. Even if he does somehow get through customs with no delay, all the entrances to Gotham City are being guarded by Bane's thugs. Plus, all the bridges have been blown up. The bat is stuck on a roof of the building where Wayne left it, so he doesn't have access to this new flying machine. And speaking of which, somehow the bat has not been discovered in the months Wayne has been exiled in the prison. Are we supposed to believe that no one checked up there during Bane's occupation? Or maybe that the sheet of camouflage has kept the secrecy? And when Bruce Wayne gets back, how does he know exactly how much time is left on the bomb and where Selina Kyle will be?
He gets a lucky break with Selina.
Oh Kyle. My god! Lucky breaks! How many effing lucky breaks can you have in this movie?
It happens all the time in movies.
Blah!
Happens all the time in movies.
This, like I've said, both Nolans have established such grounded reality in these movies. And you expect us to believe a couple of lucky breaks fly in his way?
Well, he also knows like whereabouts she's going to be running around anyway. She's on Gotham Island. But
it's a huge island. It's this huge island, and he just happens to walk into.
All right, you just said it right there, though. It's a huge island. Right away, you can derive that they had no reason to be checking rooftops for the bat.
Why would they?
It's a huge city. Think of like.
It's a lot of buildings in Gotham.
Technically, Bane's little army is not that big. In a city the size of New York City, are you seriously going to take all this time to check rooftops for
even all this time? They have 5 months. They have five films to look at.
They wouldn't know what the hell they were looking for. Why would they be checking rooftops?
Well, maybe they could stumble upon it. Hey, maybe there's a police helicopter on these roofs. You know,
What? They have tumblers.
Aerial support of some kind.
They don't need it. They
now you're giving them reasons as to why they may be doing this. Why can't you just be giving Batman reasons as to why he may be doing this?
Because it's too much coincidence for Batman and Bruce Wayne, and I'm coming up with a very realistic possibility of how Bane or his lackeys could stumble upon this item which is left on the roof.
All right,
open
it,
on the roof.
Is it ridiculous? To assume that Bruce Wayne would have some sort of contingency plan just in case he were to be somehow exiled from Gotham. Like, he would have some kind of contingency plan, like, exactly know how to get back in, like, know some kind of back door, have a fucking separate bat cave, like, outside of.
For Gotham. A movie that is desires to explain a lot to me, they don't explain that to me.
All right. Have you played Batman Arkham Asylum?
Yes.
What's underneath Arkham Asylum? A second Batcave.
Okay.
I've never heard of a second Batcave ever in the comics.
We're not talking about the game. We're talking about this movie and the universe that Christopher Nolan has established.
Well, how does he get back in? He gets back in through the Batcave.
The Batcave?
Wayne Manor is not in Gotham proper. It's on the outskirts of Gotham. He can get back in that
but
way.
But how does he get back into the United States? How does he travel from India to the United States?
He's same Bruce Wayne.
The same way Michael Douglas did it in the game.
No. Right. No. We can't reference other movies or video games. Right. We have to stay within this universe.
He's Bruce Wayne. He's the most one of the most
recognizable faces in the entire world.
In the entire world. He has influence. He has friends. He's worldwide.
They don't, like I've said, they don't show this to me. They go to links to show me so many other things.
But why do you need to show that? Like, did you question how the hell Mark Ruffalo got back to the Avengers in the
Avengers. Once again, we're not talking about.
But I'm just saying, it's a very similar thing. He was way far away
from the
Avengers.
It's another universe.
And he just randomly shows up on a motorcycle.
That's another universe that's much more fantastical. This is a non-fantastical movie.
You don't need to be fantastical to.
I'm not saying to be fantastical. I'm saying to show me some. Real to establish.
Why
to
do you need to see every step that Batman takes? Like, do you literally wanted to see him walk or even drive or fly from this prison back to Gotham? You had to see that?
Something, just something.
Like, it's why?
Because it's
back.
Unbelievable.
The end is the same. He was there. He's now here.
Because the end result of him crawling out of the pit, and the next time you see him is walking up to Selina Kyle, and how the fuck does he know where she is at that moment?
How do you even know how long he might have been looking for her for fucking 2 weeks?
Exactly.
I don't know.
I don't know, and that even crumbles.
But I just told you something, and you're still not buying it. Like,
I'm not buying it.
You have to show it to me. Why?
Because it's unbelievable to me.
You know, this movie is almost 3 hours long. You literally want to make it longer by showing him searching for Selina Kyle.
Something.
Wait, if he gets into the Batcave, he'd have access to all the computers.
But he didn't get into the Batcave.
You
don't know that.
You just didn't
like
it.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know that he got into the Batcave.
That's the only way they could get back in, because they even say at the beginning of the first or second movie that he's born outside of Gotham.
I would like to, and that's another thing that I would like to see more Batman in this movie. Not enough Batman. Too much Bruce Wayne. Too much rich people. Too many rich people. Show me more Batman.
That's not the point of number 9. Oh, number 10, actually. We're on number 11.
Hang on. My computer kind of froze up on me.
Oh, what kind of computer is that, Tim? A Mac, you say?
Okay.
Why does a prison exist where people can possibly climb to freedom, and by doing so, free all the other prisoners? Seems like pretty poor design to me. Also, what the hell is the deal with the prison? Who runs it? Are there guards? Did Bane just put him in the prison without the warden and guards knowing? Do they just accept anyone who gets thrown into the pit? As with many elements of Nolan's films, the prison is more of an idea than an actual place that makes sense.
Well, no prison is inescapable, Tim. And most of the men... Oh, excuse me. Most of them
are you bored by this already?
No. No prison is inescapable. And most of the inmates are old. They're all older men. They're all well in their 50s and
60s. I saw a number of younger people, especially even that guy that was holding the rope for them.
He might be one of the guards, actually. That's the only I can deduce with that, because he doesn't actually ever try to escape. Mm-hmm. He looks like a pretty big dude. But all these other inmates are all older men.
I saw a number of younger people.
One of the things that Bane mentioned is that what creates despair is that glimmer of hope. So all these guys that have tried to escape that prison may have made a couple of attempts and have fallen every single time. They've given up. Bruce Wayne is very hard-headed and he's like, no, I'm getting the F out of this prison and I'm going to go save Gotham. And he keeps trying and keeps trying until finally he gets it.
But
these other guys succumbed to despair, while Bruce Wayne did not. He rose above it like a dark knight.
If someone has already escaped, then why would they continue to have this prison like that?
They've only seen a child escape. They've never seen a man escape.
Still, there is the possibility of escape. And yes, I understand your idea of the glimmer of hope. But even so, it just seems a little... I don't know.
The place where men go to be broken, spiritually now.
Romano?
Is it ever specifically called a prison in the movie?
I don't remember.
I believe they call it, like, a pit. So, I mean, if you think about it, like, who were the people that were down there?
I don't think they ever really, I mean...
Well, the one guy said he used to be a doctor.
Okay.
The other guy, I think...
A noble profession. Why would they put a nice doctor down
there? Exactly. So we don't really know the backstory of this place. And I think claiming that it was strictly a prison and that it, you know, why would anybody build a prison that had, you know, a way to get out? I don't know that it was technically a prison. I think it was just a pit where people were put in to be punished. And they were given opportunities, like maybe they didn't commit crimes that were like that, you know, that would require a prison, like a murderer or something like that.
Or like a doctor.
Or like a doctor. Like maybe he did something that... You know, maybe he hurt somebody or couldn't save somebody who was important to somebody.
Or he disagreed
important.
With the warlord that built the pit.
Exactly. See, Wally and me are on the same page, Tim. Get on it.
So it's a place where people are thrown to suffer.
Yeah. It's like a... I think it's a test, and it was a test for Batman. Like, Bane gave him a chance. The same chance that he had.
Too many tests in this... Too many arcs, too many tests in this movie. Too much in this movie. The post-Bane Gotham feels totally fake. Sure, it's cinematic to have Scarecrow hosting weird trials and sending people off to icy exile, but after that initial effective sequence of watching rich people ripped out of their homes on Fifth Avenue, nothing about Gotham feels real anymore. The streets are barren, but nearly pristine. We see only rare glimpses of the occasional Tumblr patrol. Emergency relief trucks pull up with ease. There seems to be no disorder on the streets, but hell breaks loose indoors on a regular basis. This never felt like a fully realized place, only a series of gorgeous tableaus.
Ahem. Everyone's hiding. They're terrified of these criminals. These criminals are armed. They're a minority, sure, but they're armed to teeth, and they have no compunction about using violence. I would have liked to have seen the Zeus inmate at some point in this movie. I think it would have been cool to see him.
Another character?
No, just like a cameo of him. Like, remember, the reason why you can't take a life is you don't know how to do it. So give me the detonator, and he throws it, and I'll tell you what you should have done.
Oh,
before.
That guy, yeah.
They should have brought him back, just like to show up at one point. Maybe helping the people of Gotham kind of stay low from the other criminals. But these people are terrified. They're in hiding.
Yeah, this is also This also goes back to one of my original complaints about this movie, in that you would think that there would be some sort of underground alliance against these thugs, you know, that would like to team up with the cops that have established themselves as a force against them, you know, an underground force. You think that there'd be a few people, a few of the normal public that would try to rise against.
You would think, but they're all terrified of this bomb. You know what I mean? That's the overhanging thing. Even the guy who wants commissioner's job there, Matt Modine's character, doesn't want to get involved.
Which is a poorly realized character, Matthew Modine's.
I thought he was a good character as well.
He does, but he doesn't want to get involved. And if he doesn't want to get involved, he's one of the cops. You know what I mean? His brothers are down there. You know? His brothers are in blue.
Think of the odds as well. Like, you got Bane, this imposing figure. He's got a lot of dudes on his side. They're all heavily armed. And you got Commissioner Gordon with, like, a few ragtag guys. Like, are you really going to sign up for that? And try to, like, start a war against these guys and go up against
them? Yes, if you have the desire to be free of the clutches of this evil
force.
You're
not asking, like, army men or policemen. You're asking random individuals.
Wolverines!
You're asking, like pretty much, like, a family man who's got to worry about his kids or something like that to, like, hey, come and fight for us. Like, what can you possibly do to help?
What do you mean, you could do something. You could try to find supplies for the people that are fighting. You could try to find ways to undercut. It's the same thing like in Robin Hood, you know? You have these lowly peasant people rising up against the evil forces of the prince or the sheriff of Nottingham and finding ways to dispatch his soldiers one at a time. The same theory could be applied to this, you know?
I thought we weren't talking about other movies, Tim.
You're right, we're not. So, you could have lowly people who are left hiding in their houses, finding ways to build
like
underground.
They're also roving death squads. Like every now and then, one of these strongholds gets busted into
and
gets
shot
up. And
they have tumblers. They have potentially tanks with like mounted guns.
How many tumblers they have? Like three.
Three.
Okay. Three roaming the
three?
A very large.
What
city.
Do they have? That
what did
put
one do to the
could
police?
Find ways around them. They
what did one tumbler do to the police force? From Batman Begins.
Yeah, because
it did a lot.
They were all in one location. You find ways to disperse and find ways to be a rebel alliance, if you will, you know? All right. Are the Gotham City Police Department and CIA really that dumb? Why would they send every member of the Gotham City Police Department, including the SWAT team, into the sewers? Seems like a stupid move that wouldn't be made by any reputable agency of law enforcement. But to make matters worse, in The Dark Knight Rises, the GCPD aren't the only stupid government agency. In the opening prologue, the CIA agent allows hooded thugs on board a CIA plane without even finding out who the men are. Then, minutes later, the CIA airplane is unable to detect the huge non-stealth plane flying towards them.
Ahem. All right. Gordon tells them about the little expanse that he sees when he's down in the sewer. It's huge. You need a force to go in there. You don't know where they are. You have to run
every
them out.
Single police officer
But you know what he's up to. He's building something down there. They've already had the problems with the Joker blowing up an entire hospital.
Every single police officer.
If it's like, if you want to cut down on time and find this dude fast, then yeah, you send a lot of people
think
there.
Think about what the Joker did.
How stupid is that? He should use 100% of your resources.
Think about this. The Joker created chaos with just a few simple explosions. Now, Bane has, at this point, he's doing something underground that no one can see. And he's at various points all over the city. They need a force to go in and try to get those guys.
Every single resource.
You may need that resource.
Oh my god, every single resource. You don't leave a few people for some sort of contingency?
What's a couple people going to do against millions?
Still. Like they say, no reputable agency sends that many people. Maybe 20%. Maybe 25%. You know, 100%?
That wouldn't be enough to find this guy.
Unrealistic.
It wouldn't be enough to find this guy.
Unrealistic.
Not with the amount of square footage that you have to cover underneath Gotham.
Wrong.
No, it makes perfect sense.
How about the plane? Not detecting a non-stealth plane. Fire.
You're flying in a DC-3. All right, a DC-3 is a two-prop airplane that's using to ferry what they think is an asylum prisoner from wherever they're
at. Don't
they
have radar technology on a DC-3? Don't you think a CIA plane would try to be aware of other aircraft in the area?
The other one could be stealth too. Remember, Korean smugglers use
all
the time.
No, it's a non-stealth plane.
It doesn't say non-stealth. They never said it. Where did that come from? They get caught. It comes in right in their baffles, right along their tail, and over their head.
God. And they allow hooded thugs on board a CIA plane without ever finding out who
they
are.
Can't see their faces. That makes perfect sense because
they give them incentive to bring them on because they say that this guy knows where Bane is or something like that. Of course they're gonna. If they're after this guy,
the thing is, they don't want you knowing where you're going. They don't want you seeing the kind of plane you're on. They don't want to see any sort of identifying.
No,
markings.
But without knowing who they are, not they don't obviously aren't gonna see their faces, but without knowing who these people are that you're bringing on board.
This guy is
the CIA, eager. For Christ's sake.
He's a real eager CIA guy. But he also resorts to torture on the plane. He does. By making the thing that he's shooting and throwing out of the airplane. And if they saw any of these details, clandestine would go out the window. Yeah.
Sorry. Nope. Don't say it. Most of the hand-to-hand combat is terrible. Do you remember in those old Asian martial arts movies, a group of baddies would attack the protagonist one at a time? Do you remember how unintentionally comical that looked? That's how we felt whenever Batman fights anyone in this film, except his fight with Bane, which we thought was appropriately raw and intense, and yes, I agree with that. For the most part, all the bad guys have guns, and none of them use them. Each one just waits their turn to get their ass kicked by Batman. So, yeah, no. I agree, some of the action scenes were filmed rather oddly.
All right, so would you spray an area with bullets if you could hit one of your friends?
Oh, my God.
Would you?
No, I see your point, but if you're approaching him, you know, and you have a gun in your hand...
He's not standing still. He's throwing people around.
He is standing still for the most part. He's moving slightly with his feet, but not in any... significant motion. He's pretty much an upper body hand-to-hand combatant
in
this movie.
But when he's surrounded by these guys, he's grabbing guys and throwing them around and grabbing their guns and pulling them close to him. So you wouldn't necessarily shoot into a fray if you could potentially hit some of your partners. You wouldn't do that.
There was that cool scene where they did try to shoot at him when they did that whole thing where the muzzle flashes were lighting up the dark hallway, and Batman's just like...
Yeah,
he's kind of moving in the darkness.
He's juking left and right, and he's getting closer
and closer.
They do
try to shoot at him. It's just they don't do it when they're fighting in that big mob at the end of this. But I don't agree with that the fight scenes were poorly choreographed. I thought they were great. The one especially in the sewers where he first fights Bane, I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yes, I agree with you. Absolutely.
Like, I definitely don't agree that the fight scenes were
No, they even made a point in this article to say, exception, his fights with Bane were appropriately raw and intense.
I think the fight with Catwoman, even though I didn't really believe her fighting ability, when she tries to use the gun and he's like, no guns, and they just dispatch those guys, I thought that was a pretty well choreographed fight scene as well. Like, I really don't think that that's a valid nitpick at all.
Multiple ending syndrome. At least at the end of The Return of the King, each ending got room to breathe. Here, within the span of 5 minutes, we're supposed to follow process the following. One, Batman dies in a blaze of glory. Two, Bruce Wayne donates all of his remaining assets to the betterment of children, tying up Blake's storyline. Three, Bruce Wayne apparently figured out how to program the autopilot on the Bat. Four, Bruce Wayne survived the crash and is now enjoying a beautiful life in Lord knows where with Selina Kyle.
He's in Italy.
Five, Alfred is totally cool with all this and does not lose his shit at all when he finds this out. And six, Blake takes up the mantle as Batman with no training, no resources, or mentor. Also, no one notices that Bruce Wayne and Batman disappears at the same time?
Okay, let's break this down.
Okay, should we start with number one? Batman dies in a blaze of glory.
Does not die in a blaze of glory.
Okay. Bruce Wayne donates all of his remaining assets to the betterment of children, tying up Blake's storyline.
After talking to Blake about how the money stopped, he's like, you know what? Yeah, this is a worthy cause for me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna, you know, bring the flow of money back to him. He amends his will shortly after.
Oh, that's so sweet. It's so nice.
Yeah.
Yay. All right.
The thing with Blake, that scene with him when he first meets with Bruce Wayne is awesome, and it makes total sense at the end. Blake is pretty much Batman without the money. He's an orphan just like Batman. He lost his parents. You get the sense that if he would have had money, he would have gone the exact same route as Batman. Which is why, like, at the end, he leaves all that shit to Blake. Because he knows he's going to carry on the mantle. Because he's made of the same... He's the same type of person.
You know what? I think, as opposed to Harvey Dent being a character in the second film, that Blake would have been a better character to introduce in the second film.
Yeah.
To establish that relationship between Bruce Wayne and Blake. I think that would have been a much better arc.
Introduce him, but I don't think completely replace Harvey Dent. I liked Harvey
Dent.
Oh,
yeah, completely replace Harvey Dent.
No,
I think Harvey Dent is the weakest point of this whole trilogy.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Go back and listen to our review of The Dark Knight Rises, and I talk about why I believe that he's the weakest link. Bruce Wayne apparently figured out how to program the autopilot on the Bat.
Yep, because Lucius Fox says, I think you'd be able to figure this out. So Batman has had university training. He knows how
Batman
to do shit.
Batman builds that fucking sonar thing based on Lucius's thing at the end of The Dark Knight. Why is it so unbelievable to believe? Why did nobody nitpick that, but they nitpick in this?
No, I think some people nitpicked the idea of that sonar thing that
he took a concept and
he expanded on it.
On it.
Okay. I agree. Obviously, yes, I think he's able to figure out how to correct an autopilot, but I think it's a little sloppily put together of the scene showing Lucius Fox figuring out, oh, wait a minute, the autopilot was fixed by Bruce Wayne a few weeks earlier.
Yeah,
a couple months ago. Yeah,
it was sloppily put together. I think
it's a.
It makes sense
because
he's like, what could I have done to like that could have made this better? Like, what could I have done to save him? And that's what he wants. If there's anything more he could have done, and they're like, oh, it's already been taken care of.
Bruce Wayne survived the crash, the explosion, and is now enjoying a beautiful life
in Florence, Italy,
with Selina Kyle.
Yep.
And when Alfred sees this, he does not lose his shit.
He doesn't.
You can say that maybe he didn't want Alfred to worry, and he might have written him ahead of time.
Oh my God.
No, not even that. Alfred
it's
says
possible.
It. Alfred says it like, when you went away, I took a vacation every year, and that I was always hope. I went to this little place in Italy, and I always thought that if I saw you at this little cafe where I'd have my drink, that I would see you. You would see me. We wouldn't say a word. And we go on separate ways. And at that point, I would know you were all right.
But this is after the scene, the most emotional scene in the movie, where Alfred is giving his tears to the Mr. and Mrs. Wayne at their graves, saying he's sorry for not being able to protect their son. You know, they give this great emotional moment. It's so intense and heartfelt, and then it's just completely undercut with the scene of him seeing the two of them,
and his eyes get wide for a minute.
There's no expression of shock, not at all. I disagree. I just see a nice little nod and a hint of a smirk. You know what, if that's where the movie should have ended, right there, they should not have shown Bruce and Selina at the cafe. They should have just cut with that slight hint of a look by Alfred, and that's it. That's fade to black right there. That's the movie. That's a much better ending than showing them having a nice little coffee. Yay.
That's what, but that you get to see that Alfred gets what he's hoping for.
Bruce has moved on. Leave it more subtle. Just give me a hint of ambiguity, you know?
Like, but all the other subtle stuff is the stuff that people make nitpicks about.
No. We're talking about the construction of this movie, and that is part of the construction of the ending, and that is, I think, is poorly done.
What about all the other subtleties in this movie that people are making a big deal about? The stuff that, like, you can look at, if you read between the lines a little bit, you'll see it.
It's all about the construction of the movie and that, the universe that is developed by
But the thing is, Nolan. People are complaining that, like, oh, you didn't show me this, you didn't show me this, you didn't show me this. It's all in between the lines if you looked at it. And now you don't want, now all of a sudden, now, don't show me this, this big ending.
Yes, because it undercuts.
You can't have it both ways.
It undercuts the previous scene.
You either show you it all, you don't show you anything.
No, you can have a little bit of both, you know? And you can still have a great movie.
I thought the ending would have been good either way. I don't think that the ending that they chose was bad in any way. I don't believe that the other one is automatically better because they wouldn't have showed what Alfred was seeing. I think the only reason he doesn't react a lot more shocked is because he must have known he was going to be there. It makes absolutely no sense for him not to react and just kind of look up and take a sip of tea. Like, that makes absolutely no sense. He would be shocked beyond fucking belief if he thought Bruce Wayne was dead and all of a sudden he's just there. He had to have known that he was going to be there. There was no other explanation.
And no one notices that Bruce Wayne and Batman have disappeared at the same time. Not only at the end of this movie, but also in between The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises.
That's the exact same nitpick as why no one is able to put two and two together and just know that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
What do you mean that's a nitpick? That's a huge hole. You know, how does so no is, one else...
So is the 8 years that Batman is gone is the same 8 years yes. that Bruce Wayne has yes. been hiding in his little room.
Exactly.
All right.
Now, also, keep in mind, Bruce Wayne doesn't let people take pictures of him.
Oh, my God, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's because the time
frame. If you had a picture of Bruce Wayne on there and you just took a crayon and started doodling and doodled a mask on, you would get the picture of Batman. And every time he goes out, he turns on that little EMP thing, no pictures, so that his face isn't ever... seen by the public.
And plus he goes out of his way in the other two movies to really push the fact that he's eccentric and that he does things his own way and stuff like that. So that could be a way where people would just assume, like, there's no way this guy could be Batman. He's too full of himself.
He's too crazy.
He's too crazy. He's too out there. He's too much of a playboy to ever care about anything more than just himself.
I don't see that. I don't see how only Blake is the only one that could figure this out. Somebody else had to put two and two together two times. Both times. Yes, absolutely.
No, without any pictures, without any base to jump off of, you wouldn't put it together.
It's also the time frame. It's too much of a coincidence. You know, like, it's too much of a coincidence that Bruce Wayne finds Selina Kyle at the right moment, at the right time.
He knows where to look. He knows Gotham like the back of his hand.
It's
That's
too much
street.
Of a coincidence that only one person figures this out in the two time frames that Batman and Bruce Wayne disappear at the same time.
All right, let me go to another movie. I have to.
Okay.
All right, why in the Iron Man movie is no one able to figure out, until the end when he finally reveals, I am Iron Man, no one questions the fact that Tony Stark, this guy who builds insane amounts of weaponry, could possibly be Iron Man?
Well, they do...
His own friend...
No, his own friend does figure it out, because he pretty much tells him, but either way... The time frame between when he first creates the Iron Man suit.
Tony Stark is gone. He comes back. All of a sudden, Iron Man is there as well.
Right. And that's fine because the time frame there, it's not nearly as much time frame as established in Iron Man than it is in this movie. Plus, that universe that's created in the Marvel franchise
is
more fantastical. This is a much more grounded movie. You're supposed to make me believe that this is a reality-based a film, and I have too many moments of suspension of disbelief. Sorry.
You're supposed to suspend your disbelief in any comic book movie.
This is not a comic book movie.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, this is...
I think it can be more than a comic movie. You can see it that way, but in when you break it down to its smallest factor, it's a comic
book movie. It's a comic
movie.
No, it's just a crime novel is what it is, with some eccentric characters. I don't see it as a comic book movie. It's too much based in reality. It takes away a lot of the detective work that is established as who Bruce Wayne and Batman are. There's not enough detective work. There's not enough Batman in the third movie. I see this as if it was written as a crime story, a normal crime story with normal people who don't dress up as caped crusaders.
It'd be a police story.
It would be a nice police story.
Add a costume, it's a superhero story.
And you add the costume, and it takes me out of it. And it's a comic book movie. No, it's not a comic book movie.
Yes, it is.
Technically speaking, it's a comic book movie, but ultimately, it's just a crime story. And I don't appreciate it.
I wouldn't oversimplify it and say it's just a crime story. I mean, these movies have a lot more to them than just good guy, bad guy.
What would you classify The Punisher as? The John Travolta, Thomas Jane Punisher.
I haven't seen it.
Right, have you seen Punisher Warzone?
No.
All right, that's a crime story about a guy who's taking out other bad guys who's not wearing a costume. It's still a superhero movie. It's still a comic book movie.
It's a story based off of a comic book. The Batman trilogy is a story taken from the Batman comics, and I accept that. But ultimately,
it's a comic book story.
I just see it as a crime story.
It's a comic book story, Tim. You have Caped Crusaders and heroes.
I accept the first and some elements of the second movie as a comic book,
like super high tech gadgets
elements, but towards the latter half of the second movie and into this third movie, it just turns this whole trilogy up into just a normal crime story.
I could even say James Bond is a superhero. Is a comic book movie.
But we're not talking about that.
Think about it. What do they have in common? They have a main character who has a villain who uses gadgets for his ends to stop a villain from destroying the world, taking over the world. It is a comic book structure, both James Bond and Batman.
Sorry.
Boom.
Nope.
Thank you.
Nope. I'm glad you guys enjoy this trilogy much more than I do. Obviously, I'm in the minority when it comes to this, and the more I hear people exclaim the virtues of this third movie and the trilogy as a whole, I am just baffled and I shake my fists at them. But I'm sure other people do the same with movies that I have enjoyed.
Like,
you know,
Bourne.
Fair enough. I don't begrudge you two for them. I'll allow it. I accept it.
And as far as Blake goes, he does have training. He's a detective. He's a police officer. He has basic hand-to-hand skills, which all you really need as Batman is your basic hand-to-hand skills. And a black costume. Mm. And being able to hide and be sneaky.
Okay.
He'll learn that on the job.
Sure.
When he takes over the mantle of the Bat.
So ultimately, we had given grades in our original review. You guys have both given it an A.
I gave it an A-.
I believe I gave it an A.
Yeah, and I had given it a B-. So do you guys still keep those grades?
I do. I saw it a second time, actually.
Yeah.
In the theater, I went back and I watched it again, and I still give it the A-.
Okay.
I'd still give it an A.
Yeah, let's still give it a B-.
Well, we still have the same grades last time.
That's right. So. That does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can follow us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
And you can download all of our episodes on iTunes. Feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Send us an email, a tweet, or post on our Facebook page if you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch. We'll consider just about anything, especially if all three of us have never seen it. Stay tuned for our next podcast. I'm sure we'll talk about something very interesting.
Yes, we will. First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.